And welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, or healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. So this week, you'll hear from the Cure staff. Hi, my name's Christy Call. I'm the Associate Editorial Director for Cure Magazine, and you kind of hear my voice every week, or almost every week. Yeah. Nice to meet you all.
And I'm Katie Costco. I am one of the managing editors of the print publication, so I work on Cure and Heal magazines.
And I am Jessica Skarzinski. I am the social media manager for Cure and Heal. So if you ever interact with us on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, that's me.
And my name is Brielle Bennion, and I am Cure's web editor.
So today we're here to look back and discuss the best of our 2018 Cure Talks Cancer podcasts. First, we're going to actually start with the podcast that kicked all of the Cure Talks Cancer podcasts off, Barbells for Boobs. Brielle, so you did that interview. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah, so our podcast launched March 1st, so it actually wasn't even a full year, but as 2018 is coming to a close, it's definitely exciting to reflect on all of these. As a CrossFitter myself, I was really excited to talk to Ziana Hansen from Barbells for Boobs. So essentially, she started a nonprofit for breast cancer, particularly for people who are diagnosed with breast cancer at an earlier age. So her best friend was diagnosed at the age of 26. So obviously, you're not going for your mammograms at 26. You're not doing all that stuff. So it really kind of gave them a safe space and an outlet for, you know, the journey that they were going through. And at the same time, there was this huge fitness portion of it, which was awesome. The first workout was, it's called Grace. Any CrossFitters listening out there, 30 clean and jerks for time. It'll definitely get you gassed. So it was really, really cool talking to her. And I think it was a good start for our podcast, just a really positive energy. She was so down to earth. It was awesome.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that they're raising awareness for a group of women that's under the age of 40. I mean, you always hear about older adults that get breast cancer, but to actually kind of raise that education, like, hey, you know your body best, go get checked, whether it doesn't matter your age, you know?
Well, yeah, I remember talking to her, and her friend found a lump, and healthcare practitioners were like, no, you're 26, like, it's fine, it's fine. And they really focus on the fact that 7% of people are diagnosed under the age of 40, or 7% of diagnoses, rather, are under the age of 40. And it's a small percentage, but that's still a lot of people when you count it all up, so.
Yeah, I would say that one of the number one things that I hear when I speak with just different patients and survivors is be your own advocate, be your own voice, because, you know, you have these doctors who, yes, they know the medicine, but you know your body and you know the way you're feeling. So that definitely makes sense.
Okay, so we can move on. So another one of our exciting podcasts is when we got to speak with McDreamy himself for any of our Grey's Anatomy fans out there. So Katie, you spoke with Patrick Dempsey at our Ovarian Cancer Heroes event. Can you tell us a little bit more about talking with the steamboat himself?
Absolutely. This was a hands-down dream come true. I remember sitting in my college dorm 13 years ago, watching Grey's Anatomy with my girlfriends. We would pour a glass of wine and we would sit on the couch and we would watch it. It would be a rush to get home from class to make sure that we could see the episodes. So to be, you know, like I said, 13 years later, sitting in McDreamy's hotel suite, interviewing him as he is sitting across from me, was really just something incredible. All of my friends were like, you have to FaceTime us so that we can meet him too. And I was like, no, I might get in trouble. But he was just charismatic. He was down to earth. And he was also just very genuine. You think that you're going into this, you know, celebrities, this big stars hotel suite, and you're meeting him. I was so nervous going into it, and he made me so comfortable. So that was just really kind of awesome. At one point, right before the interview started, his phone rang, his cell phone, and he basically answered, and it was his son, who he has twin sons, and he was arguing with his twin brother over a video game. And he walked back over. He excused himself for a second, and he walked back over, and he was like, oh, he's like, do you have kids? And I was like, nope, not yet. You know, it was one of those aha moments for me that they're real people too. Yeah. They're just like us. Yeah. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Real people that get affected by cancer.
Exactly.
In
everyday
life.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He had some great stuff to talk about, right?
Absolutely. So I think probably the most inspiring thing was that he created this Dempsey Center with his sisters after his mom received an ovarian cancer diagnosis. And she lived with the disease for 17 years, which is a very long time for ovarian cancer. And she eventually passed away from it, but she was able to enjoy a lot of the resources that that center created. You know, they have everything from nutrition to Reiki to acupuncture, knitting classes. He spoke about how she just really loved being part of that social aspect and also doing the knitting, which is something that she truly enjoyed. He also brought up a story of how when he was going into the center, he saw a woman sitting in the corner, and he went over to her and said, you know, how are you doing? And kind of just reached out to her. And she turned to him and said, I'm tired. And he thought she was a patient, but she actually was a caregiver who was coming to the center for just that little bit of relief. And it's really open to everybody. Anybody affected by cancer, caregivers, survivors, people who are going through it at the current moment. And it's just a really good resource that he's passionate about.
Yeah, definitely. Nice. I remember him saying that it was almost like therapeutic for his mom to volunteer as a survivor. And then even at our event, he was just talking about how he just wanted to meet the doctors who were making these advances in ovarian cancer. So it was almost humbling for him, too.
Exactly. Yeah. He at one point during the event, he had all the doctors that helped his mom stand up, because there were a couple of them in the room, and he had everybody applaud for them, which was kind of cool. And he really took the time to get to know doctors, get to know the people who are making the drugs and studying the drugs, and really getting to know the patients. He sat there and went table to table, which is kind of unheard of when you think about that, to speak with people. And, you know, we're kind of like, we don't have time for this. But he wanted to make sure he spoke with every single table, maybe not every single person, because he couldn't do it with a room full of 150 something people. But he was able to go and at least be a presence there, you know, and it was really great. Another thing, too, is when we were coming down from his room, we were on the 42nd floor and taking this elevator down the hallway. I'm thinking to myself, I have to keep, you know, Patrick Dempsey, like, this discreet presence that he couldn't be here. And sure enough, we hit every single floor on the way down. And people were coming on. And here I am, my heart's pounding. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to get fired because, you know, Patrick Dempsey, people are talking to him and they shouldn't be. And he was just the sweetest person on earth, introducing himself like, hi, I'm Patrick Dempsey. Nice to meet you.
And if they didn't know.
Exactly. Exactly. But that was just another kind of experience where it just shows just how genuine of a person he is, really trying to get to know the people involved in the whole program.
Yeah. I remember him saying a lot of just looking at the whole picture.
So yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so next up, we're going to hit across the advocacy space. Knitted Knockers, we featured them back in October during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Jess, you want to tell us a little bit more about that one?
Yeah, Knitted Knockers, they were actually a group that I found personally. I stumbled upon them. I think we were talking about them or something like that one day in the office. And it turns out, so this is a group that they are a network of volunteers all around the country, all around the world, that knit and hand make prosthetic breasts for women who have undergone breast cancer mastectomy surgeries. So because the usual prosthetics tend to be heavy and hot, I learned that firsthand through my mother, who experienced breast cancer. She went through it about a decade ago. Knock on wood, she's all good now, but she had the mastectomy, and so now she has this prosthetic and she hates it. I'm sure she won't mind me talking about her, but she was actually really excited. So what I did was I ordered one of the knockers. I love talking about them like this because it's so funny to call them knockers. I ordered a knocker for her birthday over the summer, and she loved it. She thought it was the coolest thing in the world, and she had never heard of any of them before. So like I explained them to her. I finally said, you know what, let me learn a little bit more about them. So I reached out to Barbara DeMorest, who is the founder of knittedknockers.org. And I just learned more about their story, how she kind of worked with the woman who started using the name and like kind of, you know, invented the pattern, and how it kind of evolved into this big international thing that, that exists now. And, you know, her story was just really interesting because she went through it herself And she didn't want to have to deal with the prosthetic. And her doctor asked her this, you know, unbelievably simple question when she was at the at her doctor's office, do you knit? And from there, she basically was like, this is it. This is my calling. And it blossomed into this, you know, huge, humongous thing and has just helped so many women. And, you know, to even have it personally touch me, I was like, that was really cool. And I wanted to kind of spread the word about that.
Yeah, so. It's a great way to kind of touch upon like that chord of people who want to help and maybe don't know how to.
Yes.
So if you know how to knit.
Yes, exactly.
Now you can help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, this, you know, big, you have to get trained on anything. Mm-hmm. The pattern is available online. You know, they have networks across all the states and a lot of countries where basically, you know, you go onto the website, you fill out a form, and then it gets directed to the people in your local state and, you know, a knitter near you, basically.
near you.
Exactly, yeah. Like, but the cute thing is that they kind of leave it up to those people who want to get involved and volunteer. They can do whatever they want to do. Once they make the knocker and they send it out, people, you know, write little handmade notes and mm-hmm. include other little gifts with them. Like, it's a really
it's a nice
sweet
touch.
Thing. Yeah, it really yeah. is. They personalize it and they make it, you know, that you're not alone. You don't have to go through this alone. There's people out there. Even if you've never met them, there's people that care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that was nice.
That's yeah, it affects story. So many people too. And she said it was 1 million women who had a mastectomy and never went under reconstruction. Like, that's mm-hmm. a crazy number to me.
Yeah, yeah. To think about that. But again, you know, you don't realize, a lot of people don't realize until they have to go through it, that reconstruction is just a whole other surgery. Mm-hmm, and right. a lot of people don't want to have to go through that after yeah. going through the rigmarole of cancer and having to deal with all of the surgeries and the recovery and all that. To have to add another painful procedure to the list is, you know, something that they might not necessarily want to do. So this is, you know, and again, those, the traditional prosthetics tend to be kind of hot and heavy. And, you know, I told this story to Barbara when I spoke with her on the phone, and my mother loves telling the story about how she likes to take that prosthetic out and just throw it on the table because it just gets so frustrating. So
I want
you know.
To come to one of your family parties. Sounds like a really good party.
She would
trick.
Gladly do that. Yeah. Yeah, but no, it was nice to actually meet that woman, obviously virtually over the phone, but then share her story with everybody and kind of spread the word. So
I know that they're free, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's
so
another thing.
That's mm-hmm. another thing I think that's really important to mention because I know from editing a lot of our contributor articles, they write they have X amount of mastectomy bras or, you know, breast implants that they can get, or prosthesis rather. Per year that's covered by insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you have your swimming prosthesis mm-hmm. or your going out prosthesis, and that doesn't work for every situation. Or in the summer it gets hot and heavy and gross, and then you have to, you know, either pay a lot of money, because I know these things aren't cheap, or you have to just wait until it's your turn. You know, insurance deems mm-hmm. it okay for you to kind of get something else. So to provide a comfortable option that's going to be less sweaty and yeah. more comfortable and for free, I think that's so important. I don't think it's something that's discussed enough when somebody goes through the breast cancer
mm-hmm.
journey, is just that, like, all right, there's going to be difficulties and frustrations even after you're completely out 10 years later.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one thing that Barbara actually, that one of the quotes that we got out of that podcast was, she felt whole again the first time that she put that knitted knocker in. And it was like, you know, what kind of, like she said, an aha moment can you really give to other people, where it's like, you know, if you have that traditional prosthesis or you didn't want to go that route,
mm-hmm.
what is your option? You know, but this is something that people have handmade with care, that a lot of them have gone through it themselves. So they know what they would want out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And again, since it's free, you know, it's just, it's awesome. That much better. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. So, I, you know, no offense to Patrick Dempsey, but the next podcast we're going to talk about is with the cutest interview that we were able to conduct.
Yes.
In conjunction with Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, we spoke with Micah. I'm going to let Brielle discuss that a little further, but he is quite literally the cutest little kid that mm-hmm. I think I've listened to.
He was so adorable. I was just grinning the whole time I was talking to him on the phone. My colleagues and deskmates were probably looking at me like, what is going on? But essentially, Micah is 7 years old. Actually, his father was telling his story. I was on the phone with his dad and him, and he was like, well, Micah's 7 years old, and, you know, this is a story, blah, 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 blah. And then Micah stopped him, like, halfway through. He's like, wait, Dad, I'm 7 3/4.
Oh, okay. Is that Pat 8 years old? Yes,
so Micah's 7 3/4. He might be 8 by the time this comes out. I'm not even really sure, but he was diagnosed with neuroblastoma as a child, and he underwent surgery and radiation and chemotherapy. He fought the battle, the disease rather, more than once, and he was on a few different clinical trials. And what I loved about Micah was he had the coolest attitude for a 7-year-old facing what is the scariest thing that anybody can face at any age. And what I thought was really awesome about Micah is in being on clinical trials, he said at one point that he feels like he's a role model for other kids. And he's going through these treatments and he's trying out these treatments.
He's the tester.
Yes. He was the tester. Yes, he was the tester of the treatments. No matter how much barfing they cause. And he gave us a lovely anecdote of when he was taking these few drugs. And he knew the name of the drugs, which was impressive.
I don't even know the names of the drugs.
Or
at least how to say them.
Oncology gets difficult sometimes. So he was on these drugs, and then he went out to a restaurant with his family, and he barfed all over his food. That was something that he felt should be shared. But it was awesome. And at the end of the interview, Micah said, yeah, when I grow up, I want to be a doctor, so that way I could help other kids with cancer. And I just thought that was so, so great. And his dad was on the phone with us, and he was just so proud, not only that his son wanted to grow up and help others, like the doctors and nurses helped him, but also that he's in remission now and that he can have dreams of what he wants to do 20 years from now. So he was also at the end of the interview was adorable. We were wrapping up and he was like, and one more question. Would you like to play geography quiz?
Wait, the question is, did you play?
I would have loved to, but then his dad was like, no, Brielle has to go back to work. And that, I was also like, yeah, Brielle does have to go back to work. But man, like, I would have just sat there and
really use the info on where Portugal is. I never remember.
Like, it was adorable, but he was so cool. And he was explaining his disease and so smart, and especially for someone who went through everything he went through.
Yeah, I remember you hanging up the phone. I remember that day when you did the interview and you hung up and we were like, who were you on the phone with?
You're like octave change, speaking to a child versus an adult.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Really enthusiastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely crazy to think that somebody under the age of 10, right? Under the age of, you know, 8, can have this much perspective. I think it's something that took me 30 plus years to really kind of figure out. So
I still don't have it. He's miles ahead of me.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just kind of inspiring. He's like the little scientist.
Yeah. I love that he wants to be a doctor. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, so many people, even adults that we know, may get, you know, kind of take it in the opposite direction and kind of get, you know, depressed about it and really, you know, not have that perspective and kind of go down a negative path. Mm-hmm. But this just kind of goes to show that there, you know, a positive attitude is possible anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Little guy with a big heart.
Definitely.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. Big dreams.
Yes. Well, we all loved Micah for sure. Yes. I think he's all of our favorites.
Yes.
Okay, so the last podcast we're going to talk about, if anybody knows me personally, you all know that I'm a huge sports fan. So to say that when I had the chance to speak with Jim Kelly, for those of you who don't know him, he's a Pro Football Hall of Fame quarterback. He took the Buffalo Bills to 4 consecutive Super Bowls. So when they reached out and said I could talk to him, it was kind of like a fangirl moment for me. So we spoke with Jim Kelly after he won the Jimmy V Award for Perseverance at the ESPYs. For a little bit of background on that award, Jimmy V was a basketball coach, and his big thing was to never give up. So this award goes to individuals within the athletic space, you know, that pretty much live through that mantra every day. So to say that Jim Kelly should have been given this award is an understatement. And he was just so humbled when I had asked him, like, how did it feel when you found out you were getting this award? And all he could keep saying was just humbled. And, you know, he was just so fun to talk to. And he had such you know, he's fought head and neck cancer 3 times now, and he just had such a funny outlook. Like, he was chuckling on the phone with me, you know, like, he was just, he was awesome to talk to. And in speaking with him, he actually said that he's, you know, gone through the 4 F's to help him through his cancer journey, which it used to be fun, but now he turned it into faith. That him and his family draw deeply upon that. In addition with that, family, friends, and the fans. A lot of what he had to say was just trying to give back. So even despite everything that he's been through, he just wants to continually pay it forward, which is, you know, just so inspiring to me to see, you know, that somebody can utilize or leverage, you know, their platform with the way that he has. So, you know, it's just, it was great speaking with him and his listening to his takeaways and just being so positive and telling people to also never give up. You know, I just, he was the best person I could have thought to have won that award this year for sure.
I remember the day you interviewed him, just like how Katie remembers the mic interview. I remember you getting off the phone and being ear to ear grins because that was a pretty cool conversation to have.
I remember seeing some of the images of him and his family, like while he was in the hospital and going through all that recovery process. And it really just goes to show you what having that support behind you can do. And not everybody has that in the form of family, but you can get that from friends, from, you know, a community, whether it be a church or an event that you go to, a club that you're a part of. But really having that connection is important to kind of help push you through and keep you positive.
His daughter actually wrote a book called Kelly Tough, and that's kind of also their kind of family mantra, I guess you could talk about. Just Kelly Tough, I guess, you know, Jim Kelly, and he's just tough.
And kudos to his wife too.
Yeah, we spoke with her too afterwards, and she was just as inspirational. And she just talked to people about, you know, what you can do, whether it's blogging or working out just to kind of make time for yourself, and that it's okay not to be okay sometimes. So their family just has an amazing outlook on this experience, on something that could be 3 times, like, you know, you could draw yourself into a deep depression, but they've come out of this so strong. Kelly Tough. So awesome. Strong. So.
Excellent.
I'm not a huge sports fan. I've heard of Jim Kelly, but like, he was one of the people, my husband's a huge sports fan, and I would like come home and be like, oh, yeah, so my colleague's talking to some Jim Kelly today, and he's like, what? Are you kidding me? But, yeah, so it was definitely really cool to have him be a part of Cure and share his story, both him and his wife. I mean, just the perseverance. And, you know, like Patrick Dempsey, they're just normal people at the end of the day. No matter, you could be the best football player, football coach. You can be the best, you know, actor, actress, or whatever. At the end of the day, this disease does not discriminate, and it's kind of like a binding force.
That is one thing I've learned from watching and listening to all these podcasts, watching you guys do all these interviews and listening to the podcast throughout the past couple of months. It basically, even if it's somebody that I'm not familiar with that you're talking to, or if it's just somebody off the street that, you know, we got in touch with as a result of whatever connection, from a celebrity to an everyday person.
To a seven-year-old.
To a seven-year-old, exactly. And it doesn't, even though I may not necessarily think that I want to know about that story or hear it, I listen to it and go, oh my God, this is great. You know, like it kind of, like you said, it's cross-generational. It cuts across all these different, you know, usually they're dividing factors, but it just cuts across all of those things. And there's, as long as there's that hopeful, positive message that you can get from it, that these people want to share, it's fantastic.
And that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
Exactly. To provide you guys with cancer updates, research, and education.
Exactly.
Okay, well, I think that's all we have time for today. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer Podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.